This is the Good Neighbor Podcast, the place where local businesses and neighbors come together. Here's your host, Mike Sedita.
Hello out there and welcome to episode 151 of the Good Neighbor Podcast. I am your host, Mike Sedita. Today, I am joined by Javon Grant. He's the co-owner of Slater Grant, a law firm here in the Tampa market. Javon, how are you doing today?
Mike, I'm doing great. Thanks for having us.
Oh, thank you so much for being on. Like I said, when we were talking a little bit, I have met your partner somewhere. Fortunately, I didn't have to hire him. I just met him at a networking event. So I didn't have a need for an attorney at that point. But I'm glad to have you on to learn a little bit more about the firm.
Well, I'm the better half, Mike, so that's
okay. All right, perfect. We will make sure he gets a copy of this when we're done, and you can use it as use it as some blackmail for something down the road. In case you're not aware of what the Good Neighbor Podcast is, how we got started, just to fill you in, back in 2020, when we all needed to be socially distant, the Good Neighbor Podcast was born in Southwest Florida as a way for local business owners, entrepreneurs, charitable groups to get their message out to the community and still remain that socially distant. And in the last 4 years, we've expanded. We have Good Neighbor Podcasts from Philadelphia to Denver to Atlanta to Virginia. I'm lucky enough here in Tampa to be the guy that gets to learn about businesses in the area. So with that said, tell us a little bit about Slater Grant.
Well, first of all, congratulations on the growth. I mean, that's tremendous. And kudos to you and your team and the entire Good Neighbor Podcast group. I mean, that's really exciting. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Look, we're if you've heard one lawyer joke, you've heard them all. You know, we're personal injury lawyers and wrongful death lawyers. I think one of the things that about our businesses is we're here, you know, it sounds cliche, but it's to help people. We really are. I mean, my law partner Scott and I, we come from large law firms, corporate. We were both shareholders where we did a lot of business litigation, and we ultimately were just missing that piece that we were not helping the people we wanted to help. And that's why we started Slater Grant in 2017. We wanted to be a different type of firm, which we believe we are, where someone could give me a call on my cell phone, email me, text message, and they're going to get a top-notch legal advice where they could actually be helped when they're going through problems that they didn't anticipate, problems that were not their fault that they're not going through. So that's why we did what we did. And that's why Slater Grant's been successful since 17.
You know, it's funny you say that. I had this conversation with, I talked to a lot of attorneys. Fortunately, sure. I don't have to hire them, but I do talk to quite a few. You need almost a catastrophic event for you guys to be required. And then the people you're coming into contact with, probably 98% of the time, are going through something traumatic. They're scared. They don't know what's happening, or they're mad about something that has occurred in their life to get them to even have to call you. So having that personal touch, like I've owned an ad agency for, going on 14 years. Me and my old partner used to laugh and say, when you call us, you're getting the A team every single time. You know, you can call a large agency in New York City. We're this small little agency in Atlanta, but you're going to get the partners that run the firm. You're not going to get some fresh out of college person who's never, put a media plan together. People are calling and getting you guys, not some, fresh out of school kid who's never litigated a case.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Look, the thing we get a lot is, and every one of my friends are like, why do I need an ambulance chaser for? That's the key word, right? Everybody says ambulance chaser. You probably heard it talking with.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And How many lawyers does it take to do whatever? Insert task, right.
And I tell them, look, at the end of the day, I just hope you never need me, but we're the first person you call because it's a lot more nuanced than what people realize. And we really are there to get you back. You said it perfectly. They go through an event. They don't know how to manage it. They don't know how to navigate the system. An insurance company is out there trying to screw them. And, they call a firm that they're going to get to talk to the managing partner. They're going to get to talk to someone who's been there on the other side, that knows what they're talking about, that knows all the game. So that's why we started it, and we're happy we did.
Yeah, I think what a lot of people fail to realize is, garden variety. Let's use a garden variety case. I'm at a traffic light and somebody hits me there's an accident of some sort. Every word that I say to the law enforcement that gets documented, to the other person in that car, from the minute it happens, that information can get used against me to loophole me out of a potential settlement, right? I mean, that's the nuance that I think you're referring to, unless I'm misunderstanding it. So the key is that crash occurs, the first call should be to your attorney and have them say, okay, you're in the car, and you guys guide them. Hey, you're in the car, don't say anything to anybody. Do you need to go to the hospital? Go to the hospital, whatever you need to do. Having that person ready on that moment's notice where it's right in their phone, they know the name, boom, they're going to call, could save them or basically get them thousands upon thousands of dollars versus the insurance company saying, hey, we have this accident report. You told law enforcement you were, you know, nothing was bothering you at the time or whatever. And then you kind of have to backtrack through it, right?
That's right. No, absolutely. It's like calling any professional. You're not going to go, I'm not a plumber. I'm not going to go try to fix a leaky pipe. I'm going to call someone to tell me how to do it. 100%. So it's no different. No different.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. I mean, okay, so you and Slater, you guys know each other for a long, like, what's your story? Like, were you, when you were a little kid on the playground, were you like trying to litigate all the fights in the courtyard? Yeah. Like, no, he's wrong. Guilty, objection. Or were you just kind of a smart book guy, wanted to always go into law? Or did you want to be like an opera singer and you just fell into just PI stuff?
That's funny. Well, my dream was to play in the NBA. So I'm a big sports guy. So grew up playing football, basketball, and baseball. Headed to college to play, blew out a couple of knees. But I always wanted to be a lawyer and at least the litigator, because it was an extension of sports. It's me versus you. It's a competition. It's competition always, right? And so I'm very competitive. My wife will tell you that that's a bad thing, that she sometimes feels like she's always on the stand cross-examination. But being able to do what I do with Scott and I didn't know each other. We met together. Okay. We met each other in law school. And he stayed in Tampa. I went to Jacksonville, but we always wanted to form a firm. And he's just like me, competitive, wants to help people. And he played sports in high school as well. So it was just a natural progression. My dad always told me, he said, look, man, you are 6'1" and you can't jump. You're never playing in the NBA. So why don't you do something else? So this is what I did.
So did you blow out your knee playing basketball? Is that how you did it?
Yeah. Well, playing football and then kind of, you know, springboard into basketball as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's tough knees. I mean, I was a bigger guy when I'm actually probably about 50 pounds lighter than I was in high school. I played offensive and defensive line, but I blew out my knee one good time. And back in the late 80s, dating myself, they didn't have these orthoscopic surgeries where they went in, zipped it up, and you could be actually back playing a sport or doing something. They cut your kneecap open, replaced all the cartilage, and you were on crutches for 6-7 months. So it wasn't really, it was a different time back then. But once I did that, my knee, at this age now, at 50, going on 52, knee cracks and pops. Every time I stand up, something's going. So my dreams of playing anything were really kind of squandered early on. But is that, the competitive thing? It's funny you say that. My girlfriend and I were riding our bicycles through Tampa Palms. And I'm so competitive that I'm pedaling ahead of her, like trying to create a race out of it. And she rolls her eyes and it's like, there's something wrong with you. Once you lose that competitive edge, does the litigation side of it fulfill that void? Like they say, when pro players retire, they have that void. They don't know what to do with it. Did that ability to go for the fight a little bit, that it felt filled in perfect for what your competitive juices needed?
It did. And, there's all, there are different types of lawyers. Some lawyers just sit behind a desk and look at books. So for me, being able to stand up in front of a 6-person jury, knowing that I have to convince them of my side versus, and the other guy's going to convince them, try to convince them of his or her side, it's a game. I'm in a different arena as opposed to being on a football field or a basketball court. I'm in a courtroom. And I think once you lose that, like if you lose that competitive juices, I'm no good to my client. I'm no good to the legal profession. I mean, it gets me going every morning.
So let me ask you this. When you and the other lawyers are, waiting by the hospital for the ambulance to pull in, are you guys joking about like my settlement number is this? I mean, we know who the big guy is in the market. Everybody hates the big guy that does all the advertising. Oh, yeah. We all know who it is. We're not going to say it here. And their big thing is, over $700 million, whatever their number is that they throw out there. When you guys are all sitting around, it's competition. You say, I just settled one for $20 million. I just settled one. I mean, is it kind of like that? I mean, jokingly, tongue in cheek?
You know, it's funny. It's not like that at all. So what most people wouldn't realize is, you know, the bar itself, we call it the bar, the plaintiff's bar, is very collegial, right? There's so much competition out there, so many cases, but we all help each other because ultimately our real competition is the insurance companies.
Right.
Because most people don't realize that insurance companies, they're not out there for your friend. They don't have you. You're not in good hands. Their job is to make money. Their job is to save on policies that you bought.
Yep.
Right. And so, you know, it's funny, you know, we are in competition for clients, but we all try to help each other out so we can maximize against the real competition, which are those insurance companies.
Well, I mean, that kind of leads into one of my questions about misconceptions and myths. Like one of the things, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm not a lawyer. I'm a podcaster and a marketing guy, and that's what I do. But if someone has a, if I have a policy and my limits are $100,000 and I don't have any other assets or nothing to go after, a case like that, and I rear end somebody, if it's truly my fault, I mean, those cases are kind of easy, right? Like basically, hey, you call the insurance company, clearly this person's at fault. They have a $100,000 limit. This person has injuries. And those are generally, and I'm saying garden variety, relatively very easy, don't take a lot of like litigation and stuff. The insurance company and something like that will say, hey, look, we'll offer you something to settle to get it to go away because they know what their math is, having to litigate it out versus just paying off a number. And again, you can tell me if that's wrong, but then when are those big ones? Like if someone's driving a corporate, like Tracy Morgan getting hit by a Walmart truck, like you're clamoring for that case, right? I mean, you know that one's going to be a whale. But most of them are pretty garden variety or not.
Well, the famous lawyer answer for anything is it depends, right?
So depends on the circumstance.
You would hope that a rear end collision, the insurance company is going to step up to the plate and do what they are supposed to do, what they need to do. The reality is a lot of times they deny fault for even those. So you wouldn't think that, but it's the case because it's all about saving a dollar for them. You're a number. You're not Mike. I'm not Javen.
Right.
You're 1,500 million, whatever it is. And rear end accident is really your garden variety. That should be simple.
Right.
Where it really gets down to it when you have the more complicated ones are when, you know, you have a red light here or a yellow light and people are turning at the same time and who has right of way, you know, things like that. Were they drinking? Were they working? Were they doing this? There's so many different facts.
Were they on their phone?
Were they on their phone? You know, because that's big now, right?
That's so big.
Social media checking, even if you have it right there in eyesight, you're still distracted. And, you know, I drive a big pickup truck and I'm just driving down the highway. I can look down and I tell you, 90% of people are on their phone. 90%.
Every time.
90%.
Man, I'll tell you, I was driving down Bruce B. Downs yesterday. Car gets off 75, pulls all the way to the left lane, no directional, just straight across. Okay, bonus move number one. And then gets in the left lane, which, again, maybe I'm old school and mistaken, but the left lane is like the passing lane. If you're going to pass somebody, it's not the cruise at 10 miles under the speed limit lane. So now there's a row of cars. I'm right behind this person. There's a row of cars behind me. So I have to pass on the right, which, again, it's not supposed to be the way it is. But when I do, the guy's literally like,
oh yeah,
you know, driving with his phone in his hand up high, doing his thing. And you're like, bro, like you're going to kill somebody.
What world are you living in?
What's that?
What world are you living in?
What are you living in? Right. Delusional. So let me ask you this question. And you can name names if you want. Yeah. I want to get a little juicy here. But what insurance company, in your experience, is the most difficult, like water from a rock, to get a penny? Is it the General? They spend all their money on Shaq. They don't want to actually pay out any claims.
You know what? It's funny. I'm going to give you the same answer. It depends on the season. So it used to be Geico was real bad. The General, most people who have General don't have any money. So they're not.
Anyway, right.
They don't have much coverage. Progressive's bad. I mean, here's what I will say. Most insurance companies are going to try to screw you, okay, if they can, and pay as little out as possible. And they'll tell you, look, it's the personal injury attorneys that are causing insurance rates up, that we're the ones. At the end of the day, I tell people, has your insurance ever went down? Ever?
Never.
Like Mike, I've never been in an accident in my life. My insurance has never went down, ever.
Well, they're going to turn around and say, well, you used to drive a Toyota Corolla. Now you drive a big, giant pickup truck. And then if you get married or divorced, I don't know what married or divorced has anything to do with why my insurance rate should change. I don't know what my credit score should have to do with how my insurance should change. But those are all factors these companies put into place to try to drive up that premium. Because think about it. If they collect premium from, you know, 100 people at $2,000 a year, whatever that math is, they need one accident out of that to offset. So they need to collect from a million people in their coffers so that when they do get that one or two accidents or whatever they have to pay out, it's not killing them. So listen, every day you're dealing with someone at one of the worst points of their life or one of the most tragic things they're going through, whether it's wrongful death or a bad accident or whatever's going on. What do you do to let off steam? Your wife already, we know she's not competitive. So what do you do? Do you guys go bungee jumping to kind of get a thrill, or do you guys go to the beach? What's your mode outside the office?
So I'm at the point right now, I have three young kids. So it's all immersed with family. It's my
ages.
Son.
What ages?
I got 13, 10, and 8. So
boys or girls?
Oldest is a girl. My middle one's a boy. And then my last one's a girl. And they all do things differently. So my oldest daughter is big into FFA. So I'm at a pig show pretty much every weekend, or I'm on a football field with my son or a baseball field with my son. And my youngest one is just happy to be there and she'll just do whatever. And so she, you know, she'll dance and stuff like that. But that right now, that's how I stay active and fun.
That's the whole schedule. I mean, looking ahead though, you're going to have an 18-year-old and a 13-year-old girl at the same time. You know, it's kind of a personal question, but I'm assuming you own weaponry like guns. You're going to have to keep them prominently visible when the boys start showing up, and you're going to have to teach your son how to keep everybody in line around their sisters.
I've got them lined up in my room, and then I bring them out every once in a while.
This exists in your world. Just make sure you bring anybody into this world. They know what's going on. The line is clear. So you spend most of your days, doing all the different kid activities. Let me ask you, and I get a lot of the same answer from attorneys. One of the questions I like to ask, and I'll let you answer it first before I tell you what I get from a lot of them is, and this could be personally, this could be professionally, it's kind of all your thought process, but has there been a time in your life where you've had a challenge or a hardship where you personally were like, hey, I don't know if I'm gonna overcome this, but what was it? What did you do to get through it, to get to the point where you now have this successful practice here in Tampa?
You know, I'll go with the personal side. I thought about this, you know, for a while. I saw some of the questions that you had, but I come from a broken home. So my mom and dad were divorced. My mom was a bad alcoholic. And so I had to live with my grandparents. And ultimately what living with them taught me is, look, I can't control the circumstances that I'm dealt with, right? The only thing I can control is to put on my boots or my jeans every day, strap them up, and go be the best person I can do. Hopefully God will guide me to the right spot, and he has, and you just do the best you can. Don't let external things keep you down. And I think that if our society would do that more of, it's not easy. I mean, I'm not saying it's easy, but if you got up, you keep your nose to the grind and just one day at a time try to get 1% better, I think you'll make it.
Yeah, I mean, you make a great point. I mean, you know, you can't control the external factors that lead into your current situation. And I tell people a lot of times, like, what happens, I think, in my experience, is people get overwhelmed with the abundance of whatever it is, you know? And the analogy I always use with people is, you know, you look at your, if you're looking at your kitchen sink and it's full of dishes and you're like, where do I even start? The only way to start is to grab that first dish, clean it off, and go on to the next one. And I tell people a lot of times, especially like I deal with a lot of small business owners. What I do for marketing, I deal with business owners who are running the operation, trying to do marketing, trying to do sales, doing human resources, and they're overwhelmed by just the entrepreneurship of running their business. And it's like, look, you need to do what you do well, hire people or find people to supplement the things you don't do well and let them do it well for you, and focus on revenue generating activity, the thing that's in front of you that's going to grow your business. And listen, man, when people focus, like you said, on that task at hand, everything runs better. I don't know your office structure. I mean, I'm assuming you have a paralegal or an assistant or some support staff that does some of the stuff, the nitty gritty stuff that you guys need. You do that because you could do all that work, but it's not as beneficial to doing the things that you need to do to grow the practice.
It's a great point, Mike. When Scott and I started the business in 17, we had two attorneys, me and him, and a half of paralegal who lived in Jacksonville. And we're very hands-on and we can control everything. Your statement about hiring people to do jobs that you can do, but that you shouldn't do is golden, because that's what we had to do. So we started from there. We're now at the 14 employees because we implemented that. Do I necessarily want to pay the salaries and pay the benefits? But look, I'm able to go home and spend time with my wife and kids because of that. And the businesses flourish because of it.
That's the trade-off. I mean, like, it's a funny thing. The analogy I always talk about with that is this. Painting my office, for example. I could paint this whole studio, do whatever. I can do it personally. Yeah. I have the physical and mental wherewithal to tape everything off and paint it and move everything and do all that stuff. It would take me 2 weeks to move everything to the middle of the room, tarp it off, tape everything off the way I want it, and then just to get started painting. A painter who's an expert at what they do are going to come in here and paint this room in 45 minutes and be done with it. To me, and the big thing I always tell business owners is this, figure it out, whatever the number is. Take the amount of money you earned in the year 2023 and break it down to an hourly rate, whatever that hourly rate is. Say it's $100 an hour. Say it's $500 an hour, whatever it is. Is hiring somebody to do X, whatever X is, worth, if it takes you 5 hours, is it worth $500 and the aggravation that you're going to do to have to do it? To me, I'm a big believer in, I know what I do well. I focus on what I do well and I hire professionals. Like you said earlier, like I'm not going to go try to litigate a case if someone rear ends me. I'm going to find somebody that's good, bring them in. If it's Slater Grant, hey, listen, you guys are the professionals and let you do what you do, because I'm just going to screw it up and I'm going to get aggravated. It's the same thing with day-to-day tasks in an office. I totally, and you've seen, right? Like, I mean, you just said it. Your growth has been tremendous by taking on that expense of those folks.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, so if, as we start to kind of wind this up a little bit, and you sort of touched on, back up for a second. The hardship that most attorneys tell me about is passing the bar exam.
Really?
Most of them will say the same thing. You know, getting through the bar exam was one of the most difficult things. And listen, I know it's a hard test. It's like the 17 tests to be a CPA, stockbroker, and the bar exam, all difficult. Oh, yeah. But a garden variety answer for most attorneys I talk to is getting through that bar exam. When it comes to the firm and you personally, what is the one thing you want people listening to this to know about the firm that, hey, we have to use you guys? What's the one differentiator that makes all the difference in the world for you?
When you call our firm, you get one of the managing partners that are on the case. Scott and I are on every single case that comes to our firm. Okay. So we are monitoring it. We are talking with the clients. We are personally involved in every single case that comes to this firm. There are other people managing it, right? And there are other people that are doing the day-to-day task. But the difference in us and some of these other firms is that the two individuals with the most experience are on every single case, making sure that whatever's happening is going to maximize the value of your case, but also to make sure you're getting the personal attention that we want you to get. That's the differentiating factor, Mike. Yeah. We really, not only do we believe it, we show it.
You practice it. Yes. And then just curiosity, last question before we kind of wind it down is, from a standpoint of cases coming through the door, what is the percent? You might not have the exact percent, but what's the percentage that actually go to be litigated versus stuff that gets settled? I mean, I know the answer is going to be, it depends. I get that. Right. But I mean, is there a metric?
So you may have heard about the tort reform that got passed last year. So about last year in March, the Florida legislature passed a huge tort reform. Before that, probably less than 30% were litigated. After that passed, you're probably looking at 70% litigated.
Really?
And that's because before the tort reform, there were more checks and balances on insurance companies requiring them to do more things. That's been taken away. And I'm breaking it down very simply, right? There's a lot
there's a lot of stuff behind it.
But now, because there's not as many checks and balances, they're essentially saying, you know what, pound sand. And so we have to go get it the hard way. And that means let a jury tell us what it's worth.
Right. Man, that is crazy. That is, I think we could do a whole other hour on just that alone, which we can discuss. But if someone gets into an accident, hopefully not listening to or watching this podcast while they're doing it, but if they get into an accident, what is the best way for them to get a hold of Slater Grant?
Go to our website, slatergrant.com. All of our contact information is there. You can leave you can email us directly from there. It'll come up. You can call us on our main line. All the information is there. Call us and we'll get back in touch with you. Hopefully you'll never need us.
Hopefully we'll never need to contact you, because all the people on cell phones will be paying close attention to the road and everybody will be safe, or they're going to make a car made of bubble wrap and everybody will be able to just bounce off stuff. But until that happens, if you're listening to this podcast or you're watching it and you are in a situation where you do need an attorney, you can contact Slater Grant. Their website is slatergrant.com. Their phone number is 813-995-6444. Javon is not an NBA star. We've established that. He's running all over fields and chasing his kids around and preparing for the teenage years. We've established that. So get in, build the relationship now. Contact them today. Javon, thank you for being a good neighbor. Thank you for being on the Good Neighbor Podcast. I really appreciate your time.
Mike, thanks for having us, and wish you all the success in 2024.
You too, man. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Good Neighbor Podcast Passco. To nominate your favorite local businesses to be featured on the show, go to gnppasco.com. That's gnppasco.com, or call 813-922-3610.